Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we do get into some of the hard economics, and you know, whether we like it or not, cryptocurrencies, you know, and that market has become, you know, slowly but surely becoming more and more part of, you know, the mainstream economy. And this week, we actually saw, you know, something of, I don't know whether we're going to call it a flash crash, and you know, but you know, there was an incident involving Bitcoin in El Salvador that saw over $400 billion of value being wiped out in the market. So we're just going to be exploring what all of this means, what actually happened, and you know, if it has any implications on you know, people in and around South Africa. And to help us to unpack all of these issues, we are joined by Marius Reitz, who is the general manager for Luno Africa. They are the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the country, and Marius is no stranger at all to the Business Day Spotlight, so we welcome him again. Marius, how are you today?
Hello, Mudiwa. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm good, and yourself?
No, doing all right on this end. I guess, you know, like many other people out there, just trying to make sense of what actually happened with, you know, $400 billion worth of value being wiped out. That is, you know, immense, you know, if ever, you know, if ever there was anything like that. Because I'm just thinking to myself, $400 billion is likely, you know, just a little bit more than the size of the South African economy, or you know, South Africa's GDP, just as a way to contextualize how big that number is. Maybe you could give us a bit of a timeline, you know, just around, you know, what actually happened, you know, to get us to this point.
Yes, Mudiwa. No, certainly, and I can imagine, especially newcomers, people that only got started with cryptocurrency recently, that this must be very daunting to see the price stumble by 10%, you know, in a matter of 24 hours. The price did recover slightly. I think it's only down 4-5% since the Monday levels. But yeah, it's, you know, to be honest, I do know we don't really monitor the price that closely. We're not that fixated on daily or weekly price movements. You know, we building access to the future of finance. So we think that cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin will play a very important role in the future of money, in future financial systems. Not, you know, in the next 6 to 12 months or even 2 years, but in the next 5 to 10 to even 20 years. So over the last couple of days, we had some interesting developments around the crypto world. El Salvador, a country with a population of 6 million people in Central America, this week announced that a new law was adopted in the parliament, making Bitcoin legal tender. That's alongside the US dollar. So that's a very interesting experiment. I think the market factored in that news. It's been factoring in that news over the past month or two. Even there's been a bit of a lead up. But yes, then on Wednesday, when this launched, the government created their own digital wallet called Chivo. And so residents of El Salvador could register on the government's database, install these wallets, and then they would also receive $30 of, you know, worth of Bitcoin. But of course, you know, as we could have anticipated, many logistical issues. Many people, and I believe people with Apple and Huawei smartphones, could not install this application on their phones. And I think on top of that, just a lot of confusion. I think many Salvadorans who are concerned about the cryptocurrency's volatility and how it will work, and some not being able to see the benefits. But I think if we take a step back and we look at the reasons, you know, the motivation for the government to turn to Bitcoin, I think firstly, a lot of Salvadorans reside in the income in US dollar outside of the country. And in 20, $26 billion worth of money flowed back into the country. That's roughly 23% of the country's GDP. And the government then estimated that they could potentially save consumers, residents, roughly $400 million in transaction fees if they used Bitcoin instead of going through the normal SWIFT banking channels to send these transactions. So the rationale is that, firstly, people will be able to save on transfer fees this money will go back into the pockets of the people, and they'll be able to spend that on local goods and you know, products and services. And then secondly, they're also trying to establish El Salvador as a crypto-friendly destination, and that way encourage foreign direct investment into the market. But obviously, it's not without any issues. Only 30% of people have bank accounts. So I think making access a bit more difficult, but it also gives some hope from a financial inclusion perspective. People only need a smartphone and an internet connection to be able to receive Bitcoin or to be able to transact in Bitcoin. So I think there's potential on that front. But then on the other hand, only 50% of the country has access to the internet, which is the second lowest in Latin America. So that could limit the uptake as well. So I think with Diva overall, I think the intentions are good. I think the rollout, we did see a couple of snags, a couple of issues and lots of confusion. Because as you can imagine, even in South Africa, there's still very little understanding of what Bitcoin is and how it works and what benefits it could bring to society in future. So just imagine a very, very poor country in Latin America with less than 50% access to the internet. Now, the confusion that people must have had when the government announced this. So I think it's an interesting experiment, but I think there should probably have been more collaboration and coordination between the government, the private sector, and its people. So I think, although this was priced in before the announcement, I think all these issues and negative news potentially did have an impact on the price. Let me do that. But then again, I think it could be a case of buy the rumor, sell the news, and I think that is what we witnessed this week, and the market is really on the up again.
All right. Now, to sort of continue and just think about all of the different things that, you've just mentioned, because there's a lot to take in, there's a lot to digest, over there, is the fact that you do have governments somewhere that are considering Bitcoin as legal tender at a time where you're seeing other governments trying to experiment with the digital currencies that are central bank based as opposed to Bitcoin per se. So it is an interesting experiment from that point of view, and it will be interesting to see just how far it goes, because I'm sort of guessing that it's in addition to, so one would one would wonder why there was such a big run on it. But it does give to the point that you said, the financial inclusion point, there's probably a lot of people that were looking for alternative methods of payment, and this really did seem as if it was viable. So I guess from a case study point of view, it does help as a way to sort of see from a scenario planning point of view how to better roll out some type of a national rollout when it comes to, all of these things. So when it comes to that then, so I'm guessing that whatever price action we saw on the day was simply because of how bad, or how maybe not bad, I think bad is the wrong word, but the perception, the negative perception around some of the hiccups that that happened on the day, I'm guessing that's what fed into whatever price movement we saw on that day.
Yes, I believe so. I think we have to realize that many investors or speculators in crypto probably only invest in crypto. They don't have any other investments. And we've seen this trend over the last year or two. It's young people, putting money away and instead of buying shares, they only invest in crypto, and they do their research online on Google, what we call do-it-yourself investors. And what we saw in El Salvador, earlier this week, we saw protests. So we saw people protesting outside government buildings, some violent protests as well. And I think that message or that negative image got sent out into the world, and I think that definitely did lead to some selling. And then I also think the markets did run, for the past month or so, we did see a very bullish market. We're still in a bullish upward trend, but the markets did run, the crypto markets, and I think a lot of investors, not necessarily because of what happened in El Salvador. I mean, they're a tiny country; the population is less than that of a state like New York, so it's not a big play in the crypto world. But I did think it did potentially send out a signal to the market that there's a lot of work ahead of us, on the payments front, and it's not going to be easy to deem or deem cryptocurrencies as legal tender, and there are many issues that people or countries will encounter when rolling this out. So I think that was what it was about. I don't think there was anything other from a price perspective. I think it was just sentiment. And people then react to that.
You know, coming back home then, I think it would be good for us to maybe get an update just on where things are on a regulatory point of view, because one of the things, every time I speak to you, there's always a bit of an update just around what's going on with the South African Reserve Bank, and different regulators, etc. What's going on that front back home? Because the fact that you have a South American government choosing that they're going to make Bitcoin legal tender, because that's usually one of the big debates around cryptocurrencies. Particularly Bitcoin, is it a commodity or is it a currency? Is it a hybrid? Is it a mixture of both? All of these different things. So have there been any movements, on the South African side? Because I know that it's one of those things that they say that they are watching, right? And there have been, whispers of white papers here and there. But on the ground, what's actually happening?
Yes, I think I agree. I think regulators have a difficult task. As you said, some people use crypto assets as a means of, as a medium of exchange. Some people use it as a store of value. Is it a currency? Is it an asset? Is it a commodity? And so I think regulators around the world at this point are grappling with how to classify crypto. And we're dealing with a global digital asset, that can be transferred from person to person without the need for an intermediary. It's global of nature. It knows no borders. So it's very difficult to confine something like a Bitcoin to national borders. So, on the local front, you're quite right. The South African Reserve Bank, through the Intergovernmental FinTech Working Group, they've, done a lot of good work over the last couple of years. They released the more recent position paper, detailing their thoughts and their position on how cryptocurrency and the cryptocurrency service providers like Luno should regulate it in the future. So that document, I believe, is a live working doc. So in South Africa, they've been progressive. I think we are definitely ahead of our peers in other African markets. That's for sure. South Africa is definitely leading the way on the regulatory front, in Africa. But we also have to, consider SA is quite unique in some respect, because of the fact that we have exchange control regulations. So that's a bit different to other countries such as the US, where the focus is more on the platforms, the intermediaries, to ensure they perform anti-money laundering checks and they know their customers. Whereas in SA, that's also a focus, but there's a lot of focus on exchange control. Now, and I think we have to understand this, the fact that we live in a country with capital controls. So cryptocurrency holders in South Africa transacting, doing payments using crypto and especially cross-border payments, I think should take note of the Reserve Bank's recent comments. And basically what they've said is that people should not send out more crypto than what they allowed, and according to the annual allowances, and that's the 1 million allowance, or I think, if you get approval, 11 million allowance. I think we just need good communication and collaboration between the private sector and between, government to ensure we find a way around this. A lot of value can be unlocked for consumers through crypto. We will see this play out in El Salvador, over the next couple of years. But I think the fact that crypto is a peer-to-peer, operates in a peer-to-peer model, no intermediaries. I think, looking at the size of the African remittance market in 2019, it was $40 billion. And if we take an average of, let's say 10% in fees because of all the correspondent banks and intermediaries involved, that's roughly $4 billion in fees just in 1 year, that went into the pockets of intermediaries and banks. That could have ended up in the pockets of consumers. So I think a lot of value can be unlocked, but I think there must be good collaboration and communication between the private sector and regulators to ensure that we find the best solution around SA and, you know, for that matter, other regulations in global markets as well.
So as we end off, Marius, just on a last point, given the universe of factors that you have given to us, both on the international front and on the local front, there really does seem to be a lot of opportunity for cryptocurrencies, etc., and especially at a time when we are seeing more and more institutional investors getting involved in the market, more consumers actually looking to see how they can take advantage of what's going on. What's your outlook just around cryptocurrencies as a whole? And I guess maybe even just the level of trading, since you guys, are an exchange, what's your outlook just in terms of, the exchange itself, going forward? How are things looking?
Madiba, we have a very positive outlook on the markets. We've seen a lot of growth, and we're seeing a lot of momentum in the global cryptocurrency markets. As you mentioned, institutional in investors, especially in the US, where we see a bit of a more sophisticated regulatory environment because of the fact that they've got licensing regimes and platforms need to be regulated. And then in SA, I think we also experience good growth. For Luno in SA, we signed up more than 2 million new customers, since the start of lockdown. So a lot of clients, a lot of new clients entering the market. We've seen progress on the regulatory front, and we expect that to continue. That will be the ongoing theme globally. Almost on a weekly basis, we see headlines of the SEC or, the Chinese government or even in Singapore making progress. Locally, we saw the SA Reserve Bank working together with other central banks on Project Dunbar to experiment with a central bank digital currency. So I think on the regulatory front, over the next 12 months, we'll see a lot of positive updates, hopefully. And I think regulation will be good for SA as well. And then I think the bigger issue across Africa is still access. I think it's still, although we're in 2021 and in some regions we see institutional investors and family offices and pension funds looking at crypto as an investment or as an asset on their balance sheet. The issue in Africa and in most emerging markets still remains access. Now, is it easy enough for people to use their local currencies, whether it's the Kenyan shilling, whether it's Ugandan shilling or Naira in Nigeria, to buy cryptocurrency safely? And that's our focus, for Luno Africa. We're going to continue to take Luno to new markets, to introduce people to crypto in a safe and secure manner. Because I think there's still a lot of work to be done. Although we read in the media and on many other fronts more people buy and sell crypto, the reality is that not a lot of people still understand it. So there's again a big responsibility on companies such as Luno to ensure that we play a key role on the educational front as well. So I think without looking too far ahead, I think we're in for a very exciting 12 months and 2022. And I think the foundations have been laid in 2020 and 2021, for Bitcoin and for Bitcoin platforms, for the future. So very positive, Madiba. And I think, it will still take a good couple of years before we see what we call mass adoption. If we just, just consider the internet, as an example, the first working prototype was created in the 1960s. So it's 50, 60 years ago. But only 30 years after this prototype was created, that people started to use crypto, the internet. And then it took another 10 or 20 years for the internet to reach critical mass. So to reach a point where, it's useful for us to engage on the internet to do searches because there's enough information available, enough options. So we recognize that it's still very early on. And that's why our focus is on getting the basics done right. So we'll continue to ensure that we're the safest and the easiest place for our customers and for the public to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, to learn more about cryptocurrencies and to store their cryptocurrencies. So yeah, very positive for the year ahead. We've also grown to over 500 people, Modelica. So we're growing the team. We're hiring more than 200 people currently. So lots of new opportunities to join the Luno team as well. And we need a strong team to be able to build this company going forward.
So that's been it. We're talking to Marius Reitz, who is the general manager for Luno Africa, giving us some insight into what's actually going on in the market right now. He's ending off talking about the fact that they have a very positive outlook for cryptocurrencies in the year to come. And that's based off the foundation that's been laid in previous years and a lot of the interest that has actually come up over the last year or so. They've been able to sign up, 2 million people, since the pandemic started, just, showing the type of interest that people have to invest in the markets. But we did begin just talking about the flash crash, and that was around news coming out of El Salvador, where the implementation of Bitcoin as a legal tender did not go the way that it was meant to. And, just highlighting some of the factors that actually go into doing something like that, because there is still the tension that exists between some countries and some investors looking at cryptos as commodities, specifically Bitcoin as a commodity versus it being a currency. So going forward, he's just saying that the Reserve Bank in South Africa continues to study this thing, and there's been some progress just around some of their studies, but the issue of peer-to-peer and also cross-border remittances is likely going to be some of the big factors that drive adoption across the African continent. Marius, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Madiro. It's great chatting to you today.
This is Madiro's Take.
It's very fascinating to see some of the developments that are happening around the world. This discrepancy between some governments trying to implement a digital form of their existing currency. I think we've heard of a digital yuan over in China, and also in the United States, they're also playing around, with a similar idea where you have a centralized where they have a centralized form of currency that is then used in the population. But at the same time, you also have these countries such as El Salvador that are willing to take a decentralized currency or decentralized form of finance, such as Bitcoin, and say this can be legal, this can be legal tender. And over time, it will be good to see which countries choose to go where, right? Is the US and China, because of their economic influence around the world, them choosing to go the digital currency central bank focused way? Is that going to end up being the way of the world, or are enough countries going to be able to sort of pull in the opposite direction and say, okay, fine, we'd rather go for an Ethereum, a Bitcoin, or something like that as a legal form of tender? So that particular discussion will be one to see how it evolves over time. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.